on weeknights from 6
on 2FM.
Well, a big thanks to Emma and Graham for driving us through the afternoon. It is Tuesday, February 18th. I'm Shane Dawson. You're listening to Game On. Coming up between now and the new music show at 7pm, we have two of Ireland's most exciting athletes with us. Fresh from a European track cycling gold medal, Lara Gillespie joins us on the line. And we'll also be speaking to athletics star Charlene Maudsley. Plus, Paul Corrie and Fergal Brennan round up all the latest European football news and look forward to Celtic's clash with Bayern Munich. And you can get in touch, message 51552, WhatsApp 087 187 9200, or we're on X at Game On 2FM. Good evening, listeners. Welcome along to the show. Good evening, Paul Corrie. How are you, sir?
I'm very well, Shane. Already stuck into the Champions League action that kicked off, what are we, 20 minutes ago?
20 minutes ago. AC Milan against Feyenoord. Feyenoord had a 1-0 aggregate advantage going over to Italy. However, there has been a goal already, Paul.
Yeah, there has, and it came after 60 seconds, Shane. It was a ball that came in from out wide. It was an AC Milan head that managed to, I guess, divert it back towards the 6-yard box, and it was Jimenez who got on the end of it. And I guess the twist there is Jimenez has only just been signed by AC Milan in the most recent window for €32 million from Feyenoord.
Oh,
so
nice.
Scoring against his...
I'm glad you finished your own sentence there, Paul.
Yeah, scoring against his old team. He's already bagged 2-2 in Serie A, so looking like he can add something to the top end of the pitch. And to be honest with you, Shane, it has been all Milan. They look really threatening when they go forward. Jimenez at the top with Joao Felix playing off him. And if he can get the most out of Joao Felix, I was kind of upset not to see it really work out for him at Chelsea. He's maybe a little bit lightweight for the Premier League, playing maybe in an Italian team and in Serie A each week, maybe gets the best out of him. But they look really good at the moment. And on the basis of the first 20 minutes, you'd be really surprised they didn't get through this tie.
Not a bad start for Santiago Jimenez. 20 minutes of football, one shot, one goal for the Milan striker. Kyle Walker, of course, playing for AC Milan as well, formerly of the Premier League. So 1-0 in that one. We'll be previewing all of this evening's Champions League a little bit later on as well, in the company of Fergal Brennan. Can we still chat about the League of Ireland, Paul?
I think we can.
We still think you enjoyed the weekend. You're at DiViva.
Yeah, it was brilliant. It was, you know, as an occasion, it was fantastic. But I guess the game itself was quite strong as well. I was impressed with both. I'm not sure what you thought. Some of the players that they brought into the building looked really good. Parsons out wide was very dangerous. Gave Matthews a lot of trouble, particularly in the first half. I think Moorhen gives them something in the middle of the pitch. Just somebody who quietly goes about their business. And I thought in general they looked a more solid outfit. And, you know, Talbot coming in after having pretty much a year without playing looked really strong. And I thought Cornwall as well gives them just a bit of beef at the back that maybe they've been missing over the last couple of months. I think they'll still maybe struggle to score goals unless you can get Moussa up to
They won't struggle at all. Lise Moussa, once you get him fit, he's going to run amok.
There was a lot of Moose chance, wasn't there?
through
the stadium. I thought his general play was excellent, like his hold up play. I don't think he's going to be one to stretch teams in behind. He's probably going to be one who's going to look for the ball to feed, and maybe feed the likes of Parsons or whoever that might be from wide areas to kind of join in off him. But I just wonder, do they have enough goals in the side? You probably need the likes of Tierney to hit 10. You probably need Parsons to hit 5 or 10. Hope that Moussa gets 10. And who played on the other wing?
Dale Rooney.
You probably, well, to be fair to Dale Rooney, he does chip in with
Dawson
goals.
Dawson Devoy.
Yeah, I'm not sure Dawson plays quite deep. So goals would be the main concern there. And for Rovers, it's hard to be too critical because of the fact that they're in between massive European games. But I don't know, the squad needs beefing up would be my first opinion. Michael Noonan was really good actually at the top end of the pitch, but I do think you need to support him there. I'm not sure you want to be playing Noonan in every game while he's still kind of learning the game, and he's obviously very, very young at this stage in his career. But I don't know. I can't make my mind up on Rovers at the moment. They still have obviously a very strong cohort within the side and
experience.
Yeah, and they've been doing brilliant in European football, but there's part of me that thinks it needs even more freshening up.
There's still time. They've certainly got a few quid, so.
Yeah, they might do. Like, losing Neil Ferrugia was massive. And obviously, Johnny Kenny, who finished the campaign so strong for them. There's so many goals gone out of the team. But, I don't know. Young Victor, I'm not even going to try pronounce his second name who came on in the wing, is certainly a player to watch. Michael Noonan is obviously stealing the headlines with his goal last week in Europe. But this guy who came on, like, I couldn't believe how comfortable he was on the ball. I was looking through, you know, one of the apps to see who it was because I thought he was maybe in his 20s or maybe I'd miss a signing coming in the building.
I think it was the youngest debutant for Rovers in the league.
He only just turned 16 in January.
Incredible.
And his ability on the ball was fantastic. The only thing he didn't do was finish off that chance, which he probably should have when Graham Burke went down the side and pulled it across the box. It came off his heel.
I think three or four lads could have.
Yeah,
everyone was just swinging at it wildly.
So maybe listen, these younger players, maybe they have another couple more in the academy that can freshen things up. But I don't know. Like, Stephen Bradley, listen, will definitely get them ticking again. Mm. And you would certainly expect them to be up there with Pats and Shells. But there's a part of the Rovers squad that still, in my mind, just needs a bit of freshening up.
Okay, we shall see how it all plays out. Massive night ahead on Thursday, of course, for Shamrock Rovers in their conference. They clash with Mull. We'll be previewing that later on in the week, and we will hear from Stephen Bradley. Paul Carr, we're going to switch our attention to a couple of other sports. We will let you keep us up to date with that Milan score throughout the course of this evening. In rugby, Ireland captain Kellen Dorris has been ruled out of Saturday's Six Nations clash with Wales. The skipper was considered a doubt after picking up a knee injury in the recent victory over Scotland, and it was confirmed today that he would not feature in Cardiff. Jack Conan looks set to come into the pack in place of Dorris as Ireland look to maintain their perfect start to this year's campaign. Ronan Kelleher is also ruled out with a neck issue, while Tadhg Furlong will not be risked as he continues his return to full fitness. It is hoped that all three will be available for the subsequent game with France on March 8 in Dublin. We can hear from the Ireland camp now. Assistant coach Andrew Goodman was speaking to Michael Corcoran about those absentees.
Yeah, so Kellen obviously had a little bit of a knee injury against Scotland that he's nursing away. He's not going to be available for this week, but we're hopeful he'll be available for France. He's making some positive strides. And yeah, Ronan, just a shoulder neck area, so nothing too major with him.
And in terms of Tadhg, I mean, it seems to be, is it an ongoing thing, or are you just being sort of ultra cautious with him?
Well, yeah, we obviously had a bit of a repeat when we were over in Portugal, so we're just making sure when we get him back on field this time, he's good to go and there's no more relapses in terms of his recovery.
I guess one of the positive things, you know, after this week is that there's a two-week gap to the next game, so you do have a bit of time on your side in terms of all the three people.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And as I said, it's a great opportunity for some fresh faces to come in, and we're very happy with the guys that are competing for those jerseys, so it's good to exciting to get them an opportunity.
It's a pretty competitive squad, isn't it? I mean, it's not as if you don't have ready-cooked or ready-made replacements to come in.
Yeah, as I said, there's been guys that have been playing well for the provinces in those positions, so exciting for the boys that get a chance.
And in terms of the squad composition, I mean, will there be a lot of debate about that this week, given the fact that we now know three people who won't be involved?
Yeah, of course, there's obviously going to be some natural change there. And as I said, the competition for places through the way the boys are training has been immense, and some guys went away and played provincial rugby in the weekend and played well, and so there's been some good debate around discussions.
The captaincy, that's up for discussion, obviously, a couple of natural leaders there.
Yeah, when you look through the squad, there's been a number of guys that have captained their provinces over the last few years, obviously, so there's, again, some good candidates for us to choose from.
Now, you're up against the Wales team, which is a kind of wounded Wales team, if you understand it. There's a bit of change, obviously, there as well, too, as their first home game. Are you expecting Wales to throw the kitchen sink at you right from the very beginning?
Oh, they're a proud rugby nation, we know that, and they're a gritty rugby team that, you know, they'll be confident coming back home to their home, and they'll be wanting to put a show on for their fans. So when you look at our record there over the last kind of number 10 years or so, there's a lot of boys that experience pain over there, so we've got good edge to the week this week, and we're preparing well.
The composition of the coaching staff that they have there, is it? Do you think it's a matter of trying to change a mindset, given the fact that, you know, the time they have with the players is actually relatively short in the run up to this game?
Yeah, well, there'll be a little bit of that. He's a clever coach though as well. We've seen a lot of the stuff he's been doing with Cardiff, so expect a couple of tricks to be thrown our way as well. So as always, it's about making sure we've got our big rocks sorted, attacking and defensively, for anything they may throw at us.
Now, you've played two games, you've won two games, two bonus point wins, but, I mean, there's nothing achieved yet. Three games to go. You can win a Triple Crown this week. There's an awful lot at stake, actually, in the Millennium Stadium.
Yeah, exactly. Like, the Triple Crown's a great goal to have. But prep's been around the 80-minute performance against Wales that we're going to need to, as I said, overcome a good Welsh team at home. So the preparation's been good so far, and we've got a couple more days to tweak a couple of things and get our heads right for a big performance on Saturday.
And mentioning a big performance, you might agree or disagree with me, you haven't had a sort of complete 80-minute performance yet. that doesn't happen an awful lot in at any stage throughout the course of the season. You'll be looking for improvement as you go along.
Exactly, yeah, that's the thing we've discussed a lot around the consistency through the 80 minutes. You know, as you said, it's never going to be a perfect 80-minute performance. It's probably never happened before in the game, but there's longer periods of the game where we want to be dominant for on both sides of the ball.
And you can hear live commentary of Wales versus Ireland on RT Radio 1's Saturday Sport. Elsewhere, England have made one change for their match at home to Scotland, also on Saturday, with Ollie Chesham in the second row alongside Mauro Itoje and George Martin dropping to the bench. Meanwhile, a November return to Chicago to face New Zealand is on the cards for Ireland, confirmed for Saturday, November 1st at 8 p.m. Irish time, 3 p.m. local. Ireland will also play Japan, Australia and South Africa in Dublin in a busy November international period. In cricket, Ben Curran scored an unbeaten century to steer Zimbabwe to a comprehensive 9-wicket victory over Ireland and win the one-day international series 2-1. After being put in the bat, Ireland could only make 240 for 6 from their 50 overs, with opener Andrew Balbirnie top scoring with 64 from 99 balls. In response, Curran and Brian Bennett put on 124 for the first wicket, and Curran went on to finish 118 not out from 130 balls, with captain Craig Irvine making 69 not out from 59 deliveries to secure the win with 10.3 overs to spare. We're taking a short ad break, then we're going to chat to Charlene Maudsley, so do not go anywhere. Stay with us here in Game On. Now, with thanks to Spar, I am delighted to say Irish Olympian and 400-metre star Charlene Maudsley joins us here on Game On this evening. Charlene, thanks so much for taking the time to chat. How are you?
Yeah, I'm really good. Thanks for having me.
No problem at all. Listen, first off, congratulations on your recent victory in the 400-metre at the Indoor Invitational in Scotland. New PB, 51.69 seconds. Notably, you know, a good 0.22 difference. How does this performance influence your confidence and goals for the upcoming season?
Yeah, I think it's been really important because obviously, you know, I've changed coach, so I'm in a new training block now, which has been very different. And we had just come back from camp in South Africa, so I raced less than a week from that camp. So we hadn't really done any race specific stuff. So I was kind of going into it a little bit blind. I didn't know what I would run. And that was new for me because usually I do know what I'm going to run. I have a fair idea. It was good. And then when I seen that I had ran a PB, it was just kind of like, okay, it's all worth it now. So yeah, I was really, really pleased.
Does the result at the start of the year and taking into consideration not long back from South Africa, your new link up with Tony Lester now, does it just show that this new regime is already making massive strides?
Yeah, I think so. And it's funny because I raced the week after in Metz in France, so last week. And I think I ran 51.86. And I was like, even though that was still faster than my old PB, I was like, oh, it wasn't another PB. So you kind of get brought back to reality a little bit. And, you know, I want to run faster than 51.69 that I've already ran. So I think now, knowing that I ran that first race with a PB, I know I'm capable of running faster. And I think that's what's really important, because of that. That's what brings your self-belief on. And, you know I know I'm able to do that, why not do it in a race?
How did the move come about initially, and what was the primary reason for parting with Gary Ryan and relocating with Tony?
I suppose after 2024, I had always wanted to get to the Olympics with Gary, and that was always our focus, and we had never really looked beyond that. And I had always said I would love to train with a professional group. And I guess I spoke to Tony briefly in Paris. He had a cardiac arrest last June, and I was just really asking him how he was, because I was friends with Labby and Lena, and I knew from them that he had had that. And I was just asking how he was, and we had a simple conversation. And then he told me he was relocating to the UK, and that kind of always stuck back into my head, because he was the sprint coach for Denmark. So he was living in Denmark, and that's where the girls were training under him. And they had then told me that they wanted to like create a new dynamic in the UK, and, you know, super close to home. So I'm a bit of a home bird, so I didn't want to venture too far. So it was really nice that when I actually looked at maybe moving coach, I thought Tony just kept sticking in my head. And, you know, he's obviously coached like numerous Olympians and world championship winners and medalists all throughout the years. And yeah, I guess his resume spoke for itself in a way. And yeah, he's a great person as well. So I felt like to have someone who, you know, I can joke around with, but also take the work super serious, was the perfect fit for me.
I know it's still a relatively short period of time since you've relocated, but how have you found the move professionally and even personally? Because you mentioned your homebird. I know England's not too far away, but it still is a change.
Yeah, so far we've just been on camp, so it's been like busy, but you know, I love coming home. I have the 3 week camp in South Africa and I'm counting down the days to come home. Luckily I was there this time with one of my best friends, Kira, and she's in a different training group, but I was like to her, I was like, when we arrived on the Saturday, I was like, it's only 3 weeks to go home. She was like, why are you talking about going home already? So that's how much I think of home and how much I love it. So I like to be, you know, that little bit closer. But yeah, change is always good. It's scary, but it's also exciting. And I think, you know, as I openly said that I want to run until 2028, so it's not that long. So yeah, it's exciting.
What adjustments have you made or have you planned out to make now going forward with the new training in terms of workload or even changes in style or manner of running?
Yeah, like again, I just put that all down to Tony. Like, I guess I look at that, that's his job. I just have to listen and do the work. But like small things, even like getting me to focus more on every run and training and not just focus when it comes to a race. You know, you have to be dialed in all of the time. Like, especially when you start the run, it doesn't mean like, you know, those 6 minutes in between reps, you have to be super serious. That's not the case. But when I start running, I need to think, this is how I'm going to run in a race. And Tony is very, he's really, really good for me. When we run a run, like that's 300 meters, for example, he will always make sure that we're on that first 100, like we would do it in a race, no matter how slow the run is. So even though we might slow down for the second 200 or 300, that first 100 is key. He always says that's how you set the race up. So I've become really good at that and setting my race up. And yeah, hopefully I'll be able to do that in the coming weeks and the coming months.
Speaking of the coming weeks and coming months, you mentioned your home bird. Will we see you at the Irish Indoors at the end of the month?
Yes, I will be there. I'm really excited. I can't wait for all my friends and family to go. Tony had actually said to me that we were going to run the 200. And I was like, pretty much everyone I know was like, well, we have tickets for the Sunday. And I was like, well, the 200 is only on Saturday, so I guess I'm running the 400. So I had to go back to Tony and say, I think I need to run the 4. And he was happy. He was like, okay, it'll be a bit of preparation for Appledorn. So yeah.
You'll certainly keep the home crowd happy. What are the targets then for the Europeans then next month?
I guess I don't really have one. I need to discuss with team management and also Tony to see what I'm going to do regarding the relays, because the mixed relay is on before the individual campaign kicks off and the women's is obviously after. So it's a no-brainer for the women's. Of course, I will run that all going well, that I'm in good shape and the body's happy and healthy. But yeah, it will just be a matter of seeing where to go. Like indoor, I would love to say like that, of course, I want to make the final, but indoor running is so messy. Like last year when I had qualified for the final in the world indoors, then I got disqualified. So you just have to, you have to wait for an hour after you qualify to make sure you've qualified.
The fun of it all, Charlotte. You're well used to it, I'm sure, at this stage.
Exactly. But,
I know you spoke about it before and you even mentioned it there about the intentions to compete until LA 28, and that's been extended from initial plans to perhaps call it a day after Paris last year. What was the driving factor that influenced the extension that you gave yourself?
I guess speaking to people and how well we had done at the Olympics, and then people saying you're only 26, like come on, you know, you'll only have one shot at this. So I figured, okay, I'll push it out till I'm 30. So I'll be listening to no one when it comes to 2028. I will be having my retirement party in LA, hopefully, all going well that I get there. But yeah, I guess just kind of age and also how much, like I could see I'm still getting better. And thankfully that has paid off, that I have ran faster so far this year. So it means that people were right and I was wrong. So yeah, that was kind of the factor that made me decide to stay.
Given it's a set period now, the few years, does it make you more focused and even just more driven to know, even in the back of your mind, you've a set amount of time left to achieve what you want to achieve in your career?
Yeah, and I think for me, I don't know if I'm weird because I don't have anything else that I really want to achieve. I do want to achieve sub 50 seconds, but there's nothing, I don't look at any particular championship as this has to be the one. You know, I always walk away from this sport with my medals, like no one can take them off of me. So to me, that's everything I've done. I always said I wanted to be an Olympian. I've achieved that. So everything now is just a bonus. So I'm actually in the sport this year really to enjoy it. Of course, I want to get faster. I don't want to be in the back of the race. But yeah, I think that's kind of a great mentality to have as well, because I feel no pressure. I don't really feel, you know, it's not a burden to me. So I'm really enjoying the process.
That pressure being alleviated, how beneficial do you think that might then add to your performance on track?
I think it's good. I think my first race this year, that one in Glasgow, I ended up falling into old habits and I got really, really nervous. but I noticed it in myself straight away. So I took my headphones off and I went and I chatted to my friend and I got rid of the nerves, because sometimes I'll put my headphones on, become this super strict person, which I'm not at all any other day of the week. But somehow when I think putting my headphones on and shutting everyone out is good for me on a race day, it's not. My strength and conditioning coach, Martina, she was with me in Paris and I did that before my reportage round. And she was like, I knew you were going to run bad, because I didn't let anyone speak to me. So I just realized that I'm not that person. I have to be the one who's chatting, or, you know, just forget everything that's going on and just remember I've trained hard for this. I don't act like that in training. So there's no need to act like it in a race.
Given your, I suppose, desire to engage with friends and fans and everyone around you, and you've been engaging with a lot of people on social media, answering questions about your training, personal preferences. Is it difficult maintaining that balance, having the pressure or demands of a public presence and then also being the professional athlete?
I don't think so. Sometimes I'll try engage on social media and then I'll forget to answer the questions, and then people say, why did you put that up? You forgot to answer, you didn't answer them. And I'm like, guys, I forgot. But no, I do. I liked it because I get so many messages a day that I do want to, you know, let people know the insights. But, you know, it's a step that I'll let people know so much into my training, and I'll let them into my life as far as I want to. I don't have to post everything and I don't have to share everything online. Maybe one day I will, but right now what I share is enough for me. And, you know, I like people to know what training I'm doing, because they're so interested and they support me. So I like people to know, you know, what's it like to train with Tony? What's it like to train with the girls? You know, they're interested. So I know I would be interested if it was someone else. So I would want to know. So sharing that for me is just, it's easy. And, you know, no one's forcing me to do it. So I can do it my own time. I can do it my own free will. So I think that's what's important as well.
Is there, I suppose, a view, or is it important to you, that aspect of your life, that it's important to grow the sport and continue to inspire new generations in that regard?
Yeah, exactly. Like, I know that I have young girls following me on social media. So what I put out there, they're going to see that. So, you know, before I didn't really think that way, whereas now I probably look at that a little bit more, and I want to be a positive reinforcement for them as well. Even if it's things like posting what I eat, like, you know, I will get a lot of people in my DMs who will be like, why are you eating pizza? Like, you shouldn't be eating pizza. And I'm like, yes, I should, because I'm fueling my body. Like, it doesn't matter what I'm eating. This misconception that you have to eat healthy all the time is, it's crazy to me. So like, just to let people know it's okay to eat, like, it's a good thing. You need to fuel your body. Things like that, I feel I didn't have when I was growing up. So I think it's kind of refreshing for people to see that as well.
Is it difficult to combat? And we spoke on the show before, English Premier League referees, Kai Havertz's partner, getting some serious abuse because he misses a shot. Something so simple in, from a sporting perspective, then it gets so direct, it gets so personal so quickly as well. Like, is that a difficult aspect to cope with for, from your point of view? Do you suffer any kind of that negativity?
Of course, a little bit after the Olympics. You know, I was the person who carried home the baton in fourth place. It wasn't exactly, you know, the nicest, but honestly, 98% of that was positive support. The amount of people, the lovely messages I got, like, people cried to me, I cried to them. It was, you know, it was so special to see. And of course, I get comments all the time. And, you know, I posted that I got my Olympic tattoo and, you know, people were commenting under it, you should only get that if you win a medal and things like that. And I'm like, take a day off, John, or whatever your name is, you know, like, take a day off from commenting on my Instagram post. But no, it usually is, honestly, 98% of it's fine. Sometimes I am a little bit fiery and I will comment back. I think I posted a video, it's funny because everyone's, don't look at the comments, but everyone looks at the comments. And someone said, I posted a video on my Instagram of me running. And someone was like, everyone was saying, oh, you look so fast. And then one guy was like, training for what? Fourth at the Olympics. And I just replied, thanks. How did you get on? So that response did well, but I don't bite back to everyone.
Yeah, it's allowed sometimes, I suppose.
Sometimes.
Have a day off, John. I'm going to live my life by that mantra. Have a day off, John.
Yeah,
with respect exactly. To the John's listening.
Yeah, sorry, John.
Listen, Charlie, before I let you go, broader picture. Sarah Healy lowered her 1500 metre indoor record. Off the top of my head, Lauren Cadden had a really strong performance. And Rashida skipping the indoors. But just overall, how special is this current crop of Irish female athletes in your view?
It's unreal. Like, I love to see Sarah. Sarah broke the 1500 metre record. She broke the 3K record twice. I was like, this girl's on fire. So it's insane. But like, honestly, so many people are just doing so well in the sport and across the board, like all sports are doing insane. I feel like one person does good and we're all getting that motivation to keep going. So it's absolutely amazing to see. And I'm just delighted to be a small part of that.
Well, listen, no doubt you'll be a major part of it going forward, starting with the indoor. So we'll see you at the indoor. So there's lots to look forward to coming up now in the coming days even.
Yeah, thank you so much. I'm so excited.
Game on 2FM.
Now, you're very welcome back to Game On. Before we chat to cycling sensation Larry Gillespie, Paul Corry is still with us. We will be chatting football later. Paul, you've been keeping an eye on the Milan match. How's it going?
Yeah, the halftime whistle has literally just been blown now, Shane. AC Milan still very much on top. They lead 1-0. Couple of chances since they went ahead. Rafael Leao looks a real threat on the left-hand side. He's pulled one or two balls across the box. He also had a really good shot saved in the last 5 minutes, and they are knocking on the door. It still remains 1-1 on aggregate, but on the base of what we've seen in the first half, AC Milan 64% possession, 11 attempts on goal, I'd be very surprised, Shane, if they don't hit the back of the net in the second half.
Okay, 1-0 on the night, 1-1 on aggregate, as Paul mentioned. Be chatting Celtic, Bayern Munich and plenty more besides with Fergal Brennan a little bit later on. But Lara Gillespie, cycling sensation, joins us on the line. And Lara, there's only one place to start. A massive, massive congratulations on becoming the first Irish cyclist to win an elite title at the European Track Championships by securing gold in the elimination race last week. What does that victory signify for yourself and indeed for Irish cycling?
Hi, thank you so much. Yeah, it was just really, really proud moment to finally get a big result like that. It's my first proper senior international title. So yeah, I'm just really, really special moment, for not just me, but also all the team and everyone who's been working behind the scenes in Cycling Ireland and Sport Ireland and everyone who kind of has been fighting our corner for track cycling for a while now.
I know some of our listeners might be thinking, what is an elimination race? So the race sees the last rider eliminated from the 21 strong peloton on the line each lap. That left you alongside Dutch rider Lisa van Bell and Belgian Eline Hesters for the final two laps. Lisa was eliminated in the penultimate race to the line. It came down to a straight sprint between yourself and Hesters for gold. What was going through your mind at that point, Lara?
To be honest, that was like the best race I've ever done and the best feeling I had in a race. I knew I felt really strong that day and I just kind of had conserved myself really well tactically throughout the race, so kind of never putting myself in the red throughout the whole race and positioning myself. You don't need to be leading the race the whole time, you just need to be not coming last, if that makes sense. So it's kind of a tactics thing, and just making sure I wasn't getting pipped out anywhere. And I did that, so I had a lot left in the tank actually at the end, maybe for a few more eliminations in me. So yeah, it was just really cool to be able to get to that point still feeling quite comfortable.
In addition to your gold medal, you achieved a well-earned fifth place in the Madison, fourth in both the Omnium and the points race at the recent Europeans. How do you assess your overall performance across those events?
Definitely. It was the best like shape I've been in at this kind of high level racing event. I made a few mistakes later in the week. I got a little bit under the weather. I'd already been racing for 1 week prior at the UAE Tour, like a stage race on the road. So it was kind of, my body just was kind of slowly deteriorating a little bit. I also had a bad crash last week on the road. So it was a little bit disappointing because I knew I had the legs to definitely win more medals, and I was also being marked out of it quite a lot because people could see I had good legs and I hadn't actually been in that position very much before. I'm kind of used to being the underdog and, you know, coming from behind and getting a good sprint, whereas this time people were kind of staying on my wheel and I kind of panicked in the moment. So it was a big learning curve, and I learned a lot, but overall, it was a really good experience and great for the team to come away with a win.
You mentioned the UAE Tour. Is this the first year that road racing might take centre stage for you?
Yeah, it is for sure. The last couple of seasons, I prioritised the track team pursuit because it was our first ever team pursuit qualifying for the Olympics. And that takes a lot of commitment and time, especially when we don't have a track in Ireland. We had to travel a lot more than other nations. So this year I'm fully World Tour rider on the road, and that definitely takes priority now after this European Track Championships. And yeah, that's also really exciting because there's a lot more goals and a learning to do on that side of it as well.
I saw a quote, I think it was with Maurice Brosnan, I might mean in the end, though, that the classics will tell what kind of rider I am. Like, what do you mean by that? And also, what is your preferred discipline, or do you even know?
I love all the disciplines. Like, I even love the off-road and the balance between them too. But you can't do everything, and you also can't be the best at everything. So basically, on the road, there's kind of a difference between the climbers, for example, the ones who'll win the whole Tour de France race, or there's the sprinters / classics riders, which basically go for the stages in races like the Tour de France, like one-day races, or you're ending a race in a sprint or a smaller group sprint, and that's probably what I'm the rider I am, because I'm more of a powerful, punchy type of rider rather than a, you know, lighter, smaller climber type of rider. So, yeah, I'm kind of figuring out whether I'm a pure sprinter or whether I'm I prefer a harder race and then a sprint at the end, if that makes sense. Mm. And after the UAE tour, I think also that told a lot about my physiology and that I'm capable of doing a higher power in the race and then still being able to sprint at the end. So, yeah, it's a lot of learning, and that's really exciting. And there's you can also change throughout your career what kind of rider you are. So, yeah, right now I'm still figuring it out.
You mentioned what you've learned and the experience of that. How has the experience been integrating into your relatively new team, and what support have you received in your development as a professional cyclist as a result?
Honestly, it's been amazing and better than what I ever could have dreamt of. I really have gotten the top level support with both the UAE team and also with Sport Ireland and Cycling Ireland, and I've been really lucky to meet some amazing people along the way for some personal sponsors as well. And that's really made a huge difference. I came straight onto the like professional team on the road after having an illness for a few years, so they really were really good with my development and learning how to race and how to get stronger and stronger. And I think it's shown, like, I went from winning a junior European jersey to winning a under 23 European jersey and now a elite jersey. It kind of shows that my progression was in a nice linear way, like nothing too crazy, too big, and then just these steps along the way. So yeah, I'm really lucky in that respect.
From a physical conditioning point of view, how does the road racing differ, and does it require change in your approach now going forward?
It's just more time, more kilometers, more hours. It just means that I really need to be in good weather in the winters and getting those high volume days, because, yeah, you need to be doing 5-6 hours on the road every day compared to the track where you might only need a 2-hour session or something. Mm. But the high volume really transfers well onto the track, and that's why I've seen I had the best power numbers and data that I've had ever this week at the Europeans, just because I've increased my volume on the road, which has been really satisfying.
It is an endurance sport in every sense. Given how all-consuming cycling is there ever a fear of mental burnout, because you have track, you've road seasons overlapping and training, and the obvious, I suppose, obstacles about velodromes in Ireland or lack thereof, and the fact that we're an island country, so you're going to have to go to abroad to even train. Like, from that aspect, is there any fear in the back of your head?
No, I've been really lucky. I quite like being on the move. I kind of just have this attitude that I'm a bit of a nomad, and I quite like going to different places, exploring different places, and that's just the time of my life that I'm in. Yeah, it does. Yeah, I think it's a complete mindset thing. There's a lot of people who think, oh my gosh, how do you do that? You don't get to see your family. You don't get to see anyone. But actually, I've managed it really well, and no, I don't have that worry right now. And I think actually having the difference and the variety between road and track really helps me with my mental burnout, because say if you have a bad day on the road, then I'm thinking, oh, it's okay, in 2 weeks I can show what I have on the track, or I'm really looking forward to, you know, a different type of goal. And I think that really helps me. But yeah, time will tell. And I'm very lucky now. I'm basing myself in Germany for the next couple of months with my boyfriend. He lives in Germany. And I can drive to the races in Belgium rather than having to fly all the time from Ireland. And that will save me, you know, 2 days a week of training and recovering. So, Yeah, I've gotten lucky in that aspect.
Looking ahead then, based in Germany now, so what are the primary objectives for the upcoming season, both on the track and on the road? And are there any specific races or milestones you're particularly aiming for?
Yeah, so for the track now, really the main goal will be Worlds in October. So I have a lot of time to build for that and continue what I'm learning and hopefully get more success there. And then all the in the meantime, we'll be all on the road. So the next couple of months are the classics, and I'll be racing in Belgium. They're like the top, the highest level races that you can do. I've never done a lot of them, so it's a whole new experience, but I think it'll really suit my physiology. There's a race called Paris-Roubaix in mid to end of April, mid-April, and that'll be a very big goal for me.
Looking ahead at all of that, the term generational talent is now being labelled at you, Lara. How do you handle that extra pressure?
I'd say because I'm moving around a lot, I don't hear much, you know, from home. I wouldn't deep things too much. I think it's really cool and it's an honour to represent Ireland in that way. And I'm just, but I am just doing me, and I'm just doing what I, my best every single day. So yeah, it's the same what I go into every race, even if it's the World Championships or a, you know, minor race, they still mean the same to me. And I'm still, my goal at the end of the day is still to win, but also to have fun with it. So yeah, I don't get too tough on myself mentally, and I just try to enjoy it. And hopefully, yeah, it inspires people along the way.
Yeah, final one then, just on that kind of inspiration. I know we've had Shane Stokes, Declan Quigley, journalists on the show in the past speaking about the sport, and your recent successes, along with the performances of, say, someone like Mia Griffin, have brought more attention to Irish cycling. How do you see your achievements influencing the sport's growth in Ireland? And also, what message would you like to convey to aspiring young cyclists?
Yeah, I just hope that it shows that when you put in the work and when you, you know, put in those, I guess, tougher years, maybe you have to live abroad for a while to get onto the international scene, that it does pay off and that you can reach the top level. And even when we're from Ireland, like, you don't have the same bunch experience, you don't have the same, you know, skills that maybe other European countries might have, but you can still do it, and it's completely possible once, yeah, you put your mind to it. So I think, I hope for younger girls and guys that they can see that it's possible and that you can aim for it, and that yeah, it just grows at home, that, you know, we can develop the sport more and have more riders, more kids, and make it more accessible. Because yeah, it's a really cool sport once you get into it, once you have the knowledge. And there's a lot of people now who are texting me saying, oh, I never watched this before, but it's so cool to watch. And that's the good thing about cycling, is we have a lot of races. So yeah, it's a cool hobby to have once you get into it.
Plenty of variety. Listen, Lara, I wish you all the very, very best of luck with everything going forward. Thank you so much for taking the time to chat to us here on Game On.
Game On.
Football.
Great chatting to Lara Gillespie there. However, we are turning our attention now to Association Football. Milan Fine Arts still ongoing. Paul, it is still half time, second half?
Yep.
Still half time. 1-0 to Milan, 1-1 on aggregate. Later on this evening, then, 8 o'clock, Celtic are in Munich looking to overcome a massive hurdle and challenge. We can hear from Celtic goalkeeper Kasper Schmeichel now.
I think it would be a massive achievement for sure. If you were able to put Bayern out of the Champions League, that would certainly be up there. We're under no illusion it's going to be difficult, but I have been a part of teams that have done things against the odds, so why not?
So that was Kasper Schmeichel speaking ahead of this evening's clash by Munich against Celtic. Paul Carr, we have team news from Celtic?
Yeah, we do. And I guess it's not good from an Irish perspective. I was pretty sure Adamida was going to lead the line, just given the way that he plays the game and his ability to hold the ball up and run in behind. I thought he might be that physical presence that starts for Celtic tonight, but he doesn't. He starts on the bench, Shane, as does Johnny Kenny and Liam Scales. So not being used from the get-go by Brendan Rodgers, but not to say that they won't see some action throughout the night. Jeffrey Schlupp comes in.
Okay, the recent signing.
And Maeda up top as well. I'm just trying to work out the formation. So it's Jota, Maeda, and probably Jeffrey Schlupp leading the line. So maybe he's gone for a bit of experience, which you can understand, because you would imagine Celtic are likely to be pinned back for the majority of this game, and they're going to have to withstand a huge amount of Bayern pressure. But yeah, a little bit disappointing. I thought Adam Edo might have started.
Yeah, not ideal from an Irish point of view. Nicholas Kuhn as well, the pacey winger, might catch Bayern Munich on the break. Celtic, who have failed to win any of their previous 15 matches away to the German opposition, must end that streak tonight to stay in this season's Champions League. 2-1 down on aggregate. Fergal Brennan, do you have any hope that Celtic might be able to pull off a miracle?
I do. I think obviously the odds are against them. You go back to the first leg, they put in a very good performance, and particularly the first half, they were on top. I think it's just that the gap between the two sides is shown in the way that the chances were taken, particularly the Harry Kane goal. I know there was some suspect marking that allowed him to get that goal, but that sharp edge at the top of the pitch is honestly what separates the better teams in Europe. Bayern Munich, Real Madrid, Manchester City, they've not been fantastic in the Champions League this season, but generally speaking, when chances fall their way in these big games, on these big nights, they've either got one player or two players that will stick them away. Celtic created an atmosphere in the first leg that was very positive for them, and that's kept them in the tie, along with the goal that they got in Glasgow. The structure of the team, as you mentioned there, is a little bit of a surprise. I thought Ida would start as well, but I think it is based on this idea that they are going to need to have players that will drop back in and help the midfielders. Kuhn, Maida, Jota, probably a bit more suited to that, that they'll be able to pull back, help McGregor organise, stay structured. I think we will see Ida at some point, particularly if Celtic is still in the game after the break. And he's got that threat, the kind of bizarre own goal against Bruges. He forced that error. He forced that situation. He took his two goals against Villa really well, but obviously that was from the start. So I think we will see him at some point. Celtic need to stay in the game and ensure that they're in a position that late on, those one or two chances that they probably will get, they can take them. Bayern have only kept two clean sheets in the Champions League this season as well.
Don't concede early, I would imagine, is the message, Paul Carey.
Yeah, from every Celtic fan, you feel like if Bayern were to get the first goal and to put a 3-1 in aggregate, that the tie would be out of reach for Celtic. So yeah, it's very much about sitting in, trying to be disciplined. Don't get dragged out of your shape and leave gaps for the likes of Kane, Elise, Musiala. Like, they've so much talent going forward that they can really hurt you. So it's absolutely sitting in those two blocks and trying to make it as difficult as possible for Bayern Munich to create chances. But I think they'll have a bit of hope, Shane, off the back of the last 15-20 minutes. Like Fergal has mentioned there, in the sense that they create a lot of problems for Bayern Munich. They certainly did create a lot of problems. It's just keeping yourself in the game for as long as you possibly can to have those moments at some point to potentially open them up, or whether that be a set piece, could be a sending off, anything could happen over the course of 90 minutes. But it's going to be a very, very tight affair, like very difficult affair for Celtic. Bayern have won 4 games out of 4 in the Champions League today. They've won 10 of 11 in the Bundesliga. Harry Kane leading the line. Like, there's just so much talent in that team that it's very difficult to keep them out for 90 minutes.
Yeah, an 8-point lead in the Bundesliga at the moment. It would be disrespectful to say it's a free hit for Egil, but the pressure is off Celtic, you would imagine.
To an extent, it is. But also within the context of their season, so much is riding on tonight. The title race is effectively done. And considering the gap that they've opened up, not just this season, but when you look at how far the other teams in the Scottish Premiership have fallen behind them, this has been the goal for Rodgers, to make an impact in Europe. Not necessarily to go on and win the Champions League, but to be in a position where they're reaching the knockout stages and making themselves into a bit of a force where they are a problem for some of the bigger sides, the kind of top 4 or 5 teams in Europe. It is bad luck that they've got Bayern in the playoffs. They could have very easily got somebody else if the league phase rankings had landed in a different direction, and they'd be in a much better position. But that is just the way of it. That's obviously the way the new structure has gone, with the extra games and now the playoff round being added. So I think there is pressure on them, because Rodgers knows that after tonight, they can effectively stroll to the rest of the season. And if they don't get the result, Europe is finished. And it kind of stretches out a long way, all the way through the rest of the season, through the summer, on into September time for Champions League football to come back to Celtic. So I think there is pressure in that sense. Obviously, the size of Bayern Munich puts them as underdogs in this situation, but I do think they can get something. But it is very cliche, but they need to keep themselves in the game. They need to keep organised, very, very disciplined, and take those chances. They're not going to get too many away from home at the Allianz. but the one or two chances they get, if they can take that, they've got a chance.
Okay, Bayern Munich having a 2-1 lead ahead of this evening's clash. Elsewhere this evening, Paul Curry, Atalanta trail 2-1 on aggregate to Club Brugge, and Benfica 1-1 against AS Monaco. Similar to AC Milan, you would expect, and judging on the balance of play from the first half of the Milan match at Atalanta, home advantage, probably on paper superior side to Club Brugge, you would imagine the Serie A side should progress.
Yeah, you would have thought so. Speaking about AC Milan, they've gone very close again. Kyle Walker with a great strike, as did Joe Felix. So they're really knocking on the door in that game. But yeah, you would expect Atalanta. I mean, we saw how impressive they were last year when they went on to win the Europa League here in Dublin. They're sitting third in Serie A at the moment, and you would expect, listen, Club Brugge are a decent side. I thought when they played Man City in the group stage, they caused them a lot of problems, and really well set up when it came to their defensive shape and being difficult to break down. You would imagine it's going to be very much a case of defence via attack. Club Brugge will be more than happy to stay in that shape and try to frustrate Atalanta for as long as they possibly can. But you would expect that, you know, the Italian side will go and create chances. Decent side, decent outfit. They've obviously lost one or two players off the back of the campaign last year, but still got a lot of threats going forward. And Zappacosta, ex-Chelsea, has been superb any time I've watched them going forward. He creates a huge amount of chances, and then you got the likes of the Kettle there at the top, who could potentially, you know, be the one who comes up at that important moment. But yeah, you would expect Atalanta to take the game to Club Brugge. But again, with those scorelines, when it's 2-1, if the team who are in the ascendancy score first and make it 3-1, it's a very difficult tie to come back from.
Kolasinac, I should say, back for Atalanta, who are still in the running for a Serie A title, but somewhat... unlikely, I suppose. It's fair
Cuadrado
to say.
Cuadrado in there as well, ex-Chelsea and Juventus. Darun played for Middlesbrough. So there's a couple of journeymen within that Atalanta side, but they've done an incredible job to be a really difficult team to play in Europe.
Up against Club Brugge, second in the Belgian Pro League, as are Benfica, second in the Portuguese League. Fergal Brennan, Benfica with a 1-0 advantage over AS Monaco and now home advantage. How do you see this one playing out?
I think the home side will just about get it done. Big victory away from home. They played the last half an hour with 10 men as well. But Pavlidis is a real kind of old school striker. Likes to play in the penalty box. He'll be sniffing around, looking for chances. He got a hat-trick against Barcelona in that wild game at the end of the league phase that meant that Benfica then obviously dropped into the playoffs because they lost in the final few seconds. I think they'll get this done. They're in that clutch of teams that, if we were still in the old group stages, you'd be expecting them probably to finish second in their group and get into the last 16 and maybe a quarter-final position. They're in that block of teams that generally meet their level at the first knockout stage in the Champions League. And Monaco, not the team that they were from a few seasons back. You look at some of the names that they've lost. They do still have talent. Mbolo is probably the standout name in their attack. We've seen him from an international perspective over the last couple of years. But Benfica at home, particularly with Pavlidis in really, really good form, I fancy them just to get over the line and into the draw for Friday.
Okay, listen, before we finish up, Fergal, you weren't one of the lucky few at Everton's new stadium yesterday, were you?
I wasn't. I had a couple of other things to do. I did get an invite a few weeks back, but I had a few other bits on last night. Looks incredible. I'll be looking forward very much so next season to go in when it's opened and fully functional. A lot of really, really excited Everton fans, not just for the stadium, but for the future. I think I said last week that Moyes has brought a lot of positivity back. I'm hopeful that they might be able to squeeze into the top half before the end of the season. But it's a really exciting new chapter for the club. But with a bit of sadness, Goodison Park is a real throwback of a ground, and it will be sad at the end of May to kind of see it go. But football is a very ruthless beast at Premier League level, and it moves on. And this is something that Everton have needed.
Okay, great stuff, Fergal. Thank you. Paul, before we go, there's been a red card in Milan.
A big moment, Shane. We were just saying anything could happen in the Celtic-Bayern game. Well, that has happened in the AC Milan game. Rafael Leao was breaking forward. He slipped in Theo Hernandez, who was on a booking, sees the defender Reed coming across, almost anticipates the challenge, knocks a pass Reed. Reed pulls out. Theo Hernandez goes down, dives, second yellow. So this game has completely turned on its head. It was all one-way traffic. Milan really giving Feyenoord a lot of problems to deal with. But with Theo Hernandez going off, 11-10, you kind of have to fancy Feyenoord.
We shall see.
40 minutes left in the second half. 40, then potentially another 30 of extra time. It's a long time to go with just 10.
Well, we're going to have to come off air. We can go watch the match so we can. It's all kicking off. Paul Carey, thank you very much. Fergal Brennan, thank you very much. Massive thank you to our producer, Andrew O'Connor. Laura Lee Davis, our broadcast coordinator. Don't go anywhere because Beto da Silva is up next with the new music show. Game On is back from 6 o'clock tomorrow. I shall speak to you then. From all of the Game On team, have a great evening. Bye-bye. RTE 2FM.